It's an absolute honour and pleasure to have my next guest on the line. His name is Andrew Denton. Of course, the man needs no introduction. You would know him from a couple of decades worth of incredible work across radio, television, documentary, filmmaking. But it's his recent work in recent years on the topic of voluntary assisted dying, including a very, very popular podcast called Better Off Dead. Andrew Denton, welcome to the King Review.
Thank you, Your Lordship. I feel that's what I should call you.
I feel like you should call me that as well, so feel free to do that.
Now, yes, my Lord.
Now, Andrew, I just wanted to chat a little bit about, this has been obviously a big focus for you. We haven't seen you on TV screens for a couple of years, and we miss you dearly, of course, some of those incredible shows, Enough Rope being one of my all-time favourite shows. The reason that you have dedicated yourself to what is obviously a very difficult topic to cover, voluntary assisted dying, your father passed away in 1997 at the relatively young age of 67. If you don't mind, could you tell us what was it about that experience that eventually led you down this path of being such a vocal and almost a relentless advocate for this issue?
Yeah, as you said, Dad was 67. He had chronic heart failure, was taken to our local hospital, who did the very best they could do and the very best the law would allow. But nonetheless, Dad's last 3 days were days of great pain, distress for us watching, distress for him. Even though he was sedated, it was clear that he was in pain. And it was a very shocking thing to watch and traumatizing. And my sisters and I, we didn't speak about it for many years. My mum passed away some years later. And you don't know what to do in that situation. You're in a hospital. You assume this is how it goes. Mm. It wasn't until many years later that I read an article by a woman who lived in Australia, but whose father was Dutch. And in the Netherlands, they've had a euthanasia law for almost a quarter of a century now. And it described his last week, where he was able to use their law. And his last week was spent farewelling his friends and family, getting his life in order. It was incredibly civilised and full of honour and love. And I compared his last week with my father's last days. And that's what set me on this path. Why can't we help people in that situation in that same way here?
The podcast that I mentioned there in the intro, the second season has just been uploaded on all the podcasting services, Better Off Dead. The last episode was, I mean, they're all of the episodes over the past two seasons, in fact, they can be challenging listening, but of course, very, very important. There are some lighthearted moments in there as well, but I was particularly struck by the last episode, and I guess the personal story of the Aussie larrikin, as he called himself, as you called him. Could you just give listeners who may not have heard the podcast just his story from that final episode of the podcast?
All right, so Victoria's law, which is what that podcast series is about, the voluntary assisted dying law, was passed in 2017, and it revolutionised the discussion about end-of-life care in Australia, and it's a big part of the reason Queensland's Parliament will be debating the same kind of a law in a few months' time. So this larrikin, his name is Alan Cornell, he's in his 70s, and he had motor neurone disease, and those who know of it, it's called the beast. It's an awful thing. It just takes you apart, and there's no cure, and there's a certain path to death, and it's long and it's unpleasant. So under Victoria's law, Alan could be assessed independently by two doctors, one a specialist in motor neurone disease, to say, yes, you have 12 months or less to live and you can be given a lethal medication, which you can choose to take when the time is right, if that's what you want to do. But Victoria's law says that you require not just one, but two specialists in your disease. And Alan lived in regional Victoria. And to cut a long story short, it took him nearly 100 days from when he first applied to when that medication arrived, because so many doctors didn't want to be involved. They thought it was too hard, or they had a conscientious objection. And his daughter, Kristen, who's also a doctor, recorded conversations between them and her own thoughts during this time. And what you clearly hear, despite the intention of the law, which is to help someone like Alan, is the distress and the fear caused to this family by the fact that he was a law. It was his Alan's 74th birthday when he found out that one of the specialists had declined to confirm his assessment. And Alan, who was a bloke's bloke.
Well, that was my point, Andrew. That was what really struck me, is he was an absolute, I guess, man of the land, a rough and tumble larrikin, yep. As you said, tough as nails, it sounds like, and yet to being reduced to tears, as he himself spoke about. I think that really struck me.
Yeah, and you hear him talk about, and, you know, I'll put this carefully, but he talked about the options for him.
That's right.
If he couldn't use this law, and they were dark options. And unfortunately, the parliamentary inquiry that recommended that Queensland pass this law has shown that every year in your state, 80 Queenslanders on average with terminal illnesses end up taking their own lives because, like Alan, the path ahead, there's no good medical solution.
They felt like that was their only option. They were in such pain, in such anguish, that was, as I think, as Alan says in the podcast there, it was a dark option
and he said it's messy and it involves people in a way they shouldn't be, and he said it's a desperate option. And the point about this law is to give people the choice of not having to take desperate actions like that.
We'll get to the Victorian legislation and the very, very recently introduced bill here in Queensland. But I'm interested from your point of view, Andrew. I mean, as we've just talked about in the case of Alan and pretty much every episode of the two seasons, how do you absorb and take on some of this content and this material and these discussions that you're having? I mean, I can just imagine, you know, listening to those podcasts can be a challenge at times. But for you, who's so involved in this issue, you're in people's homes, you're talking to families in this situation. What's it been like for you? How do you deal with such difficult and heavy material?
I am walking around with a companionship of ghosts, of people who I've met over the last 5 years, some of whom have had terrible endings and some of whom better, and they still speak to me. And some of them, I live just near a cafe where one of the people I interviewed in the first series, a remarkable woman, Elizabeth Lenoble, who was a former Telstra and New South Wales Businesswoman of the Year, and she died in a way that she had desperately not wanted. And every time I walk past that cafe, I think of Liz. So sometimes I find it very hard, but it's been the fuel for me. I've pretty much committed myself to this full time in recent years, and knowing what families have been put through, and the injustice and the disempowerment within the existing medical system, because these laws don't exist. Even though there are times I feel the weight of this very heavily, it's nothing compared to what I've seen people go through, and that's been my fuel.
Andrew, give us a quick overview or snapshot of the Victorian legislation. It's been in place now for over a year. Can you give us a quick snapshot, particularly for, you know, listeners in regional Queensland who may not be quite up to date with what's happened in Victoria? How has the legislation panned out? And I guess what are some of the issues that the legislation has thrown up?
Well, the legislation is nearly 2 years now. And it allows that if you are terminally ill and you have 6 months or less to live, or if you have a disease, what's called a neurological disease, like motor neurone disease, 12 months or less to live. If two doctors, one of whom is a specialist, independently assess you as being within that criteria, then you can be prescribed a lethal medication, which you can take or not. Voluntary being the first word, and voluntary assisted dying. So in its first 2 years, as with similar laws overseas, which have been running for almost a quarter of a century, the results are much the same. A very, very small number of people have used the law, about 220 people over almost 2 years. Most of those had some form of cancer. The next largest group had neurological diseases like motor neurone disease or multiple sclerosis. Most of the people that have used this medication, it's been right at the end of their life. They've been in a desperate position. I've spoken to many of the families who went through it, and some of the people that have themselves used the medication, they are so grateful that they don't have to suffer right through to the bitter end of their illness. that they're able to farewell their families in as they are, not as some kind of damaged shell of themselves. And almost without exception, the passing of those people, while desperately sad, it's not a golden ticket. You still have to die. But it's described as peaceful and beautiful. And the doctors I've spoken to have been involved, despite many critics from within their own profession, feel very strongly that this is a deep part of their care, that it is, you know, the doctor's creed is to do no harm. They see it as harm to leave somebody who is suffering to suffer when they could be helped.
And in my reading and listening on the topic in the last couple of days, researching our chat, it seems that a lot of the objections, in some cases quite outlandish claims about what this legislation would do, none of those concerns have played out.
That's right. I mean, the two main objections, and for 20 years, Australian parliaments have tried to pass this law. I think before Victoria did, there were nearly 50 failures. And that's because there was a very effective kind of hypothetical fear campaign run. And one of them was, you can't ever bring in a law which has safeguards so that vulnerable people aren't encouraged to die using this law. And the one thing that's become blatantly clear in Victoria is, if anything, this law is very difficult to access rather than being easy. And the other one, which was, it's always bothered me to hear, I've heard senior doctors say this, is that we have sufficient medicine and sufficient palliative care to deal with all suffering at the end of life. Now, we have one of the best palliative care systems in the world. We have a great medical system. But can it deal with all suffering at the end of life? No. And who says that? Well, Palliative Care Australia themselves and the doctors that work within that system say that. So those things have proven not to be true. People thought it would have, this law would damage palliative care. But in fact, almost all the people that used this law were also in palliative care, benefited from it, and opted out at a point where it could no longer help them. So all those, you know, the predictions that the sky would fall in, that doctors would be murdering their patients, which was one of the things suggested, just have not turned out to be true. As in fact, those of us that have advocated for this law know, because there's now so much information from overseas where these laws exist. It's the same everywhere. There was a doctor in Oregon put it beautifully. He was asked, Oregon in America, they've had that law for about 25 years. He was asked, why do so few people use your law? And he said, well, I'm amazed anyone thinks a lot of people would. It turns out that people just don't want to die.
Exactly right. We should also mention, of course, that Western Australia's bill on voluntary assisted dying, I think, comes into effect in July, in a couple of months.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how, of course, that pans out. Let's turn now to Queensland. Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk, following on from an election commitment, introduced a bill in recent days to allow voluntary assisted dying to occur in Queensland. It is, of course, modelled effectively on the Victorian experience. Have you had a look at any detail of that bill? Are you happy with what's been presented?
Yeah, I think it's good. I think they've also, like Western Australia and Tasmania, who've also passed the law, they've looked at Victoria, the Queensland Law Reform Commission, and suggested some things which make it less difficult for people to access. So one example in Victoria, a doctor is not allowed to raise assisted dying until a patient raises it with them. And that's the only area of medical practice where that's not allowed. In Queensland, they've said, no, you can raise it as long as you raise all the other treatment options at the same time. So that's an example of a change. The point about this law, you will hear, in fact, I think you may already have heard, I'm so used to it now. Generally, a bishop or an archbishop comes out and says, oh, we're rushing this whole thing and we mustn't rush into this. This is based on not only years of debate, but you had a parliamentary inquiry that went for nearly a year. You've had the Queensland Law Reform Commission that's worked on this. They brought out an almost 900-page report that they worked on for another half a year. It's now going to have another 12 weeks of consultation and public submissions. Built on 2 years of Victorian experience, which is built on 25 years of experience overseas. So the law that the Queensland Parliament is going to consider is built on a huge foundation of research and evidence and careful thought.
Well, you could not consult more than what has happened on this Queensland bill, as you've just said. Your thoughts on, I guess, the chances of that passing? There are, of course, in our part of the world, three CATA MPs. They've already stated that they'll oppose the bill. Labor does have a fairly healthy majority. The LNP, as a general statement, have traditionally opposed euthanasia laws. But Labor, you would expect, given that this is a conscience vote, will surely get enough to pass. But have you had a glance at the likelihood of success of passing this bill?
I have looked at it. I'm always cautious. They've been historically hard bills to pass. It's a conscience vote, which is as it should be. So it won't divide along party lines. You'll find there'll be some members of the Labor Party don't vote for it and some members of the LNP who do. I was disappointed to see the statement from the CATA Party because it's a public health question. And just the suicides alone, I think a politician that decides this on the grounds of a moral view of the world is, I think that it is their duty to look at hard evidence and to reduce public harm. But nonetheless, that's what they've said. Look, it's interesting. Where I got started with this was in South Australia in 2016, and I was deeply involved in the politics of that debate. And I sat in the parliament as that legislation 5 years ago went down by one single vote. Two nights ago, I sat in South Australia's parliament. Many of the similar voices and faces, and I watched as an improved version of the legislation based on Victoria's went to the lower house, and it passed its second reading, which means it's one step off being legislated, by 33 votes to 5. And MPs that have voted against it, a couple of them stood up quite tearfully and talked about what they'd experienced in their own families in the 5 years since, and they had got an understanding of the need for these laws. So I do believe one of the things that the Queensland Parliament will be considering very closely is what the South Australian Parliament just did, which is equity. This, by the time Queensland comes to debate this, it will be law in four of Australia's states, which will be Victoria, Tasmania, Western Australia and South Australia. And the question for Queensland's Parliament is twofold. First of all, the public support for this is off the charts. It's getting close to 90% now. But the second is, why should Queenslanders not have equitable access to the same choices at the end of life as almost every other state in Australia?
Well, a key issue, Andrew Denton, for our audience here in North and regional Queensland, of course, almost echoes the story that we talked about earlier of Alan on your Better Off Dead podcast, where access to medical professionals, as all of the safeguards in place, as Alan experienced, I guess, in regional Victoria, it took so long and was so difficult for him to access the necessary specialists and getting all of those approvals and reports done. And I think that will be an issue for regional Queensland because, you know, we don't have the same level of medical access and medical professionals as capital cities do. So that's certainly something to watch. Now, I guess just to, I know you have to run, but I guess give listeners a bit of an update, I guess, to move away from that very, very important topic. What about you? Can we ever see you on TV screens again? What are your plans beyond this very important topic?
I don't have any television plans. I like to describe myself as too ugly for television and too handsome for radio. That was a very kind introduction. Thank you. No, I feel like I've done everything I wanted to do in television. I had great opportunities and it's definitely a good time for me to do different things and to make space for other people. So, no, I won't be back on television in any way that I can imagine. I might pop up as a guest occasionally on somebody's show. I've just, as you mentioned, completed this podcast. That's taken 11 months of very solid work. So I'm taking a breath out at the moment. I'm still very involved with this legislation, and in fact, I'll be coming up to Queensland in a week's time to speak to MPs. So that's really where my focus is. And I'm doing what I think a lot of us are trying to do in the time of COVID, which is breathe in, breathe out, and be grateful.
Amazing. Well, Andrew Denton, congratulations on many, many years of advocacy on voluntary assisted dying. It's such important work. It is, I think, a heavy burden on anyone to take on what you have. But as you said, it pales in comparison to what families and those affected go through. So we appreciate your work on this, and it's a great pleasure to have you on The King Review.
Gavin, thank you very much.